World Wrestling Events, the podcast about everything pro wrestling and more.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It is Sunday, February 22nd, 2026.
And we are sitting right in the eye of the storm right now.
Oh, yeah.
We are officially on the road to WrestleMania. The big sign is up. The pyro is louder. And, you know, the internet is absolutely losing its collective mind. It's a chaotic, beautiful time to be a wrestling fan.
It really is the season of scrutiny, isn't it? I mean, the weeks between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, that's just the most volatile period of the entire calendar year.
Everything is under a microscope.
Exactly. Every promo gets dissected. Every single booking decision is magnified. And the tension, like both on screen and behind the scenes, it is just at an all-time high right now.
It feels heavier this year, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, we have a mountain of news to climb today.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about roster moves that make absolutely no sense until you really squint at them.
Right.
We've got legal situations involving massive fines and, you know, some booking decisions that have the fan base split right down the middle.
We definitely have a lot to unpack today.
But before we get into the weeds of the business, we have to pay the bills. And we are very excited about who is helping us do that today. This show is sponsored by WorldWrestlingEvents.com and BetOnline.
A very, very important partner for us. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know BetOnline is a trusted, secure platform. They accept U.S. players, which is obviously a huge factor, and they cover the entire spectrum of sports.
Yeah, and it's not just about, you know, placing a bet on the Super Bowl or the NBA Finals anymore. You can actually get in on the action for wrestling events now.
Which is wild.
It is. We just came off the Rumble. We are looking ahead to the Chamber and Mania. And BetOnline is the place to be if you want to add some stakes to the drama.
Absolutely. But as always, a quick reminder that gambling should be fun and recreational. You know your limits. However, if you are ready to get in on the action, we do have a very specific offer for you listeners today.
You are going to want to write this down. Head over to WorldWrestlingEvents.com to claim an exclusive bonus offer of up to $250 in free bets plus 100 free spins.
That is a significant offer right there. $250 gives you a lot of room to play with.
It really is. Up to $250 in free bets plus those spins. And again, the link is right there in the podcast description. So just click that, head over to WorldWrestlingEvents.com and get started.
Big thank you to our partners. So where do we even begin today?
Let's look at the roadmap. We're going to be dissecting the fallout from the Elimination Chamber cycle, specifically why the ticket sales are looking the way they are.
Very interesting data there.
Yeah. And then we have a major roster move involving a certain technical wizard taking on a general manager role.
That is a fascinating development for the developmental system, for sure.
We've also got Dominic Mysterio going global and meeting his doppelganger, which is just hilarious.
Yeah.
We need to break down some heavy disciplinary stuff happening over in AEW involving Swerve Strickland. And then we really need to talk about why WWE pulls massive matches from free TV at the very last second.
The business of booking. It's a highly complex machine.
So let's jump right into segment one, the business of booking. I want to start with the Elimination Chamber. Now, usually this event is a total layup.
Oh, yeah, it sells itself.
Right. Big steel structure, massive implications for Mania, people getting thrown through plexiglass pods. But the discourse this week hasn't really been about the match quality. It's been about the seats.
That's right. We're looking at the data regarding ticket sales for this Elimination Chamber cycle. And frankly, they haven't met the internal projections. It's softer than expected.
Now, the easy reaction for the internet to have is to say, oh, the product is cold.
Which is lazy.
Exactly. Because looking at the TV ratings, the product isn't cold at all. Viewership is great.
Yeah.
So what is going on here? You flagged something in our notes today called the Jeff Jarrett theory.
Right. So this is something that requires a bit of a history lesson for the listeners. This refers to Jeff Jarrett, the promoter, specifically looking back at the way his father, Jerry Jarrett, ran the old Memphis and Tennessee territories decades ago.
Okay.
Their whole philosophy was centered around this concept of market burnout.
Is that just like a fancy economic way of saying people get sick of seeing you?
In an economic sense, yes, basically. It's the law of diminishing marginal utility applied to live wrestling events. The theory is that every specific market, let's say a city like St. Louis or Chicago or Columbus, has a strict wallet capacity within a rolling 12-month period.
Okay, so there is a literal ceiling to how much cash a city can cough up for wrestling tickets.
Exactly. In the territory days, you could run a town every single week because tickets were cheap, you know, $5 to get into the Mid-South Coliseum. But in 2026, attending a WWE event is a massive investment. We are talking hundreds of dollars for decent lower bowl seats, plus $40 for parking, plus $40 t-shirts, plus food.
It's literally a mortgage payment for a family of four.
Precisely. So the Jeff Jarrett theory argues that if you oversaturate a market, you just hit a wall. If WWE runs a Monday Night Raw in a city, right, and then they come back 3 months later for a Friday Night SmackDown, and then they send a non-televised house show tour through the surrounding suburbs.
Right.
And then after all that, they try to book a major premium live event like the Elimination Chamber in the exact same building within that same calendar year.
The fans just tap out. They literally don't have the funds.
They have to. The wallet fatigue sets in. Right. The average customer isn't thinking, oh, but this is the chamber. This is a bigger tier event.
Right. They don't care about the tiers.
No, the customer's thinking, I just spent $400 on this exact same brand 3 months ago. My kids saw Cody Rhodes already. We're good.
So this dip in sales isn't necessarily a critique of the storylines or the creative direction at all. It's more of a critique of these scheduling logistics.
I strongly believe so. It suggests that the routing department might be overlapping way too aggressively with the touring department. You cannot drain the local market dry and expect to sell out every single time, no matter how hot the main event angle is.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
But here is the part that really grinds my gears as a fan. While we are talking about these ticket sales, we have to talk about this report regarding the blackout policy.
Yeah, yes. This is a massive point of contention right now, and rightly so.
For the listeners who might not know, explain what a blackout is in this context. Because honestly, it sounds like something from the NFL in 1995.
It is very similar to the old NFL model. Historically, a blackout policy meant that if a local sports event did not sell a certain percentage of the tickets, usually it was around 85%, the local television broadcast would be completely blocked in that region.
Which is wild to think about now.
It is. The logic back then was that if people knew they couldn't watch it on their local TV station, they would be forced to actually go buy a ticket and physically go to the stadium.
Which feels incredibly punitive. It's essentially like the promotion saying, because your neighbors didn't buy enough tickets, you aren't allowed to watch this thing you enjoy.
It is archaic, but the report suggests a variation of this is affecting the Elimination Chamber viewing in the local market. And doing this in 2026, it just creates a massive friction point with the audience.
Because the entire business model has changed. WWE isn't a gate-driven company anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are fundamentally a media rights company now.
That is the crucial distinction you have to make. 30 years ago, the money at the door, the live gate, that was the lifeblood of the entire company. If they didn't draw, the boys didn't get paid.
Right.
Today, the billions of dollars come from the streaming deals and the massive global TV rights. The gate revenue, while still important, is just the cherry on top.
So why alienate the local fan base at all? Like, if I'm in the city hosting the chamber and I just can't afford a $400 ticket, but I really want to watch on the streaming service that I already pay a monthly fee for and I get blocked out, I'm canceling my subscription immediately.
And that is the huge risk they run. It really highlights a disconnect right now between the live events department, whose sole job is to put physical bodies in seats, and the media department, whose job is to keep streaming subscribers happy and engaged.
They're fighting each other.
Exactly. The CFO wants the gate revenue to look good on the quarterly report, but the long-term brand health absolutely relies on positive fan sentiment. Blocking the locals creates horrible bad will.
It feels like stepping over dollars to pick up dimes, honestly.
A very apt metaphor.
Speaking of dollars, let's look at the bigger picture for a second. We got to look at the WWE stock report for February 2026. How is Wall Street actually feeling about the road to WrestleMania this year?
The sentiment over there is confident, but there is definitely an undercurrent of caution. The stock is holding steady right now. Wall Street loves the road to WrestleMania because historically, it is the highest revenue-generating period of the year.
Everyone buys the video game. Everyone buys the new event shirts.
Exactly. The merchandise numbers go through the roof. But you have to remember, it is also the period of highest expense. Production costs for WrestleMania are astronomical. The sets, the pyro, the stadium rentals, marketing costs just skyrocket.
So what does that actually mean for the product we see on television? Does the stock price genuinely change the booking?
In subtler ways than most fans realize, yes, it absolutely does. When corporate confidence is high, but the financial stakes are this incredibly massive, you tend to see a strategy of risk management take over the creative team.
Define risk management in wrestling terms for me.
Safer booking.
Ah.
You protect your investments. You don't take a wild creative swing on an unproven character in the main event of WrestleMania if the stock price heavily relies on a guaranteed stable engagement number.
So we get the greatest hits album.
We get the established stars. We get the rematches that have proven analytical data behind them. It's not necessarily about creative laziness, which is what the fans usually complain about. It's about fiduciary responsibility.
Right. They have a legal obligation to the shareholders.
Yes. They need to guarantee a certain floor of viewership for their broadcast partners. You don't experiment during the Super Bowl.
That is, man, that is depressing, but completely logical. It really explains why we sometimes feel like we're watching a rerun during Mania season. They are just playing defense with the shareholders.
Safe bets pay the dividends. It's business.
Well, let's move away from the boardroom and get back into the ring. Segment 2. In-ring psychology and character deep dives. Because while the suits are upstairs worrying about stock prices, we've got some incredible character work happening on the ground level. And I have to start with the man who I genuinely think is the MVP of the last 6 months. Dominic Mysterio.
The evolution of Dominic Mysterio is arguably one of the greatest success stories of the modern developmental system.
Did you see the video of him meeting his twin this week?
I did. It is all over social media right now.
For those who somehow missed it, Dominic is over on an international tour. He's walking through what looks like an airport or maybe a hotel lobby, and he runs into a fan that looks exactly like him.
It was uncanny.
I mean, the mullet is perfectly styled. The scowl is perfect. The weird patchy facial hair is spot on. It's a clone?
Absolute clone.
Now, here is where I really want your take on this. 99% of wrestlers, in that specific moment, would break character. They would laugh, they would high-five the guy, they'd take a selfie, and they'd post it on their own Instagram saying something like, look at this legend.
Right. They would prioritize the viral, feel-good human moment over the integrity of the character.
But Dom doesn't do that.
Yeah.
He looks at this guy with absolute disgust. He treats him like he's an identity thief trying to steal his wallet. He stays completely in the zone.
This is what we in the industry refer to as kayfabe 2.0.
Oh, I like that term.
In the old days, kayfabe meant pretending the fighting was completely real, hiding your family, heels, and baby faces traveling in separate cars. Wow. Today, the audience already knows it's a scripted show. So the new kayfabe is entirely about maintaining the emotional reality of the character across every single platform.
So if he's a jerk on Monday Night Raw, he has to be a jerk on his TikTok.
Exactly. If Dominic Mysterio breaks character to laugh at a fan in an airport, he signals to the audience that Dominic is just a costume he wears for work. By staying in character, by treating this doppelganger with sheer arrogance, he reinforces the illusion. He invites the audience to just keep playing the game with him.
It's so much harder to do that than to just be a cool guy and take the picture.
It requires immense discipline, honestly. It creates this meta reality where the fans actually respect him more because he refuses to wink at them and let them in on the joke.
And that level of respect is directly translating to his booking right now. We have to talk about this AAA mega title defense.
This is a very significant development for his career.
He is defending the AAA mega title. And there's a stipulation attached regarding his mask or hair, depending on how the angle actually plays out. But just the mere fact that WWE is acknowledging the AAA title on their programming.
It really speaks to the globalization of his character. 5 or 10 years ago, WWE lived entirely in a bubble. Nothing existed outside of their universe.
If you wrestled a classic in Mexico or Japan, it basically didn't happen to WWE canon.
Right. But now, allowing Dominic to carry the AAA belt on television, acknowledging that specific lineage, it gives him a prestige that goes way beyond just being Rey Mysterio's annoying son. It frames him as a legitimate world traveler, like a global champion.
It makes him feel dangerous, you know, like he has conquered territories that the other WWE guys haven't even touched.
Exactly. And bringing that lucha libre apuesta psychology, the betting of something incredibly valuable like your hair, your mask, to a mainstream American television audience, that is high stakes drama. It's distinct from everything else on the card.
I absolutely love it. I think he's doing the best work of his entire career right now. Now, let's pivot from the comedy of Dom to something way more intense. Let's talk about Liv Morgan.
A very, very heavy segment on Raw this week.
She broke down. Tears streaming, voice cracking, makeup running everywhere. And immediately, the internet debate started up. Is she okay? Is this real? Is this a shoot?
And that ambiguity is exactly the goal of the performance.
We have some reports now discussing the real reason she broke down out there. It seems to be a mix of legitimate physical exhaustion, pure passion for the business, and just the immense pressure of carrying this storyline. But as a viewer sitting on the couch, does it really matter if it's real or scripted?
That is the golden question of performance versus reality in professional wrestling. The most successful babyfaces, the ones who sell the most merchandise, the ones who move the needle on ticket sales, are almost always the ones who let their real-life vulnerability bleed directly into the script.
It's the difference between an actor acting sad and a person actually being heartbroken in front of you.
Precisely. If Liv Morgan goes out there and just recites a memorized monologue about being sad, the audience tunes out. They check their phones. But if she taps into her real frustrations, her long journey to the top, the time she was overlooked by management, the physical pain she's in, and lets that genuine emotion bubble up to the surface, that connects on a deeply visceral level.
It really blurs the line. You stop watching a fictional character and you just start rooting for the real person behind it.
And that is exactly when the true emotional investment happens. You want to see her win the title because you feel like you watched her actually suffer for it. Now, it's a very dangerous line to walk for the performer's mental health, to constantly mine your real trauma for entertainment, but it is incredibly effective storytelling.
It's powerful stuff. Now, speaking of emotional investment, I was very emotionally invested in seeing Io Sky face off against Julia on SmackDown this week.
Oh, the match that wasn't?
Yes. They advertised it. They hyped it up all week. Two of the absolute best female wrestlers in the world going at it. And then you're doing. Pulled well, but pulled from the card. Why do they do this to us?
This is a classic case of booking preservation. It deeply frustrates the viewer in the moment, I know. But it is almost always the right business move in the long run.
But I wanted to see it. I sat through 2 hours of television for it.
Think about the actual environment of Friday Night SmackDown for a second. It's a 2-hour show on network television. You have commercial breaks every 7 to 10 minutes. You have very rigid timing cues. Do you really want the first ever WWE encounter between Io Sky and Julia, a legitimate global dream match, to be chopped up by insurance and pizza commercials?
Well, when you put it that way, no. I want it uninterrupted.
Exactly. The reports indicate they pulled it to protect the matchup itself. Management realized that giving it away on free TV with limited time and constant interruptions would completely cheapen the impact. By snatching it away at the last second, they have actually increased the baseline anticipation for it.
It's the old absence makes the heart grow fonder strategy.
It is. Now, when they finally do lock up, maybe at a premium live event where they can go a solid 20 minutes with zero commercial breaks, the audience is going to be even hungrier for it. They are banking on your current frustration turning into a future buy rate.
Okay. I'm slightly less mad now. I'm still impatient, but I get the logic. One last note on physicality in this segment before we move on. Jacob Fatu.
The Samoan werewolf.
There was a report that dropped this week that honestly made my jaw hit the floor. Jacob Fatu had 11 teeth removed.
11 teeth. That is just a staggering number to comprehend.
Why? How does that even happen? And what does this say about the guy?
Well, the exact medical specifics are obviously private, but it's likely a combination of severe impact damage over the years on the independent circuit and maybe some necessary dental reconstruction. But the what it says about him part is the absolute key to his aura right now.
He sounds like a horror movie villain.
He really does. And in wrestling, locker room lore is everything. When the boys in the back and the fans online hear that Jacob Fatu had 11 teeth pulled from his skull and is still walking around taking bumps, looking like an absolute monster, likely barely missing any ring time, it builds the monster persona better than any scripted promo ever could.
It's primal. It reinforces that he just isn't built like the other guys on the roster.
Exactly. It signals to the audience that he has a much higher pain threshold, that he is fundamentally built differently. Whether it is a strict medical necessity or not, it immediately becomes part of the legend. Did you hear Fatu ripped his own teeth out? The rumors do the heavy lifting for you.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't want to be the dentist telling him he needs to floss more often.
I don't think anyone tells Jacob Fatu what to do, ever.
Absolutely not. Okay, let's shift gears a bit. We've looked at the main roster. But there is so much happening in the developmental system right now that we need to track. So, segment 3, roster moves, renamings, and the future.
This is my favorite area. This is where we see the chess pieces being moved for the next 5 years of the business.
First up, let's talk about the WWE ID program. We have a brand new signing to talk about, Starboy Charlie.
A very, very exciting talent.
For those listeners who don't follow the hardcore indie scene closely, what is the significance of this kid? And what exactly is the WWE ID program?
So Starboy Charlie is a young, hyper-athletic, very modern, independent wrestler. He's had a great run in places like GCW, incredible speed, great technique. But the bigger story here is the actual mechanism of his signing. Being given a WWE ID is not the same thing as being signed to an NXT contract.
Right. He's not packing his bags and moving to Orlando immediately, is he?
No, not at all. WWE ID is a pipeline system. It's a formal designation. It allows top-tier indie talent to officially get on the WWE radar, receive some medical support, maybe get some coaching access or facility use, but they continue to work their independent dates.
This is kind of like being tagged or drafted by the scouts, but you stay in college.
Exactly like that. It deeply benefits the wrestler because their booking fee on the indies immediately goes up. Promoters can now advertise a WWE ID talent on their flyers. And it benefits WWE because they lock in a relationship with a hot prospect without taking on the full financial cost of a main roster contract yet. It's a developmental bridge.
It's a really smart system. But once you do cross that bridge and get fully integrated into the WWE system, things usually change. Specifically, your name. We have to talk about Mike DiVecchio.
Oh, boy. A massive powerhouse from the European scene. He has an incredible look.
He does, but he is now officially going by the name Dorian Van Dux.
Dorian Van Dux.
Look, I have to be completely honest with you here. It sounds like the main villain in a straight-to-DVD vampire movie from 2004. I am Dorian Van Dux, and I have come to drink your blood.
It certainly has a very theatrical, almost gothic quality to it, but this really highlights the overarching WWE philosophy regarding intellectual property.
But why do they do this? Mike DiVecchio is a really cool name. It sounds like a tough guy from the neighborhood who's going to break your legs.
It does sound tough, but WWE doesn't own the name Mike DiVecchio. Mike owns that name. If he builds up his brand on NXT and then his contract expires and he leaves, he takes that brand equity with him over to AEW or New Japan. WWE owns Dorian Van Dux. It's completely theirs.
So if they're going to put $1 million of marketing and TV time behind him, they want to own the asset outright.
It is purely a calculated business decision. If Dorian Van Dux becomes a WrestleMania main eventer, sells millions in action figures, and is featured in the 2K video games, WWE holds that trademark forever. They want a name that is completely unique and legally protectable.
It's going to take some getting used to. I'll give him a fair chance in the ring, but man, Dorian Van Dux. Wow.
Hey, we've seen stranger names become legendary. Remember when they named a guy Hunter Hearst Helmsley?
True, true. Now, speaking of names, we also saw a new trademark filing this week for Romeo Moreno.
Yes, we did.
Any idea who this is?
Speculation online is running absolutely wild. The surname Moreno obviously suggests a Latin heritage, and Romeo strongly implies a lover character, maybe a suave romantic heel type.
I'm immediately picturing a rose in the mouth, some salsa dancing on the entrance ramp.
Yeah.
All the classic tropes.
It is a classic wrestling trope because, historically, it just works. It generates massive heat from male fans. Whether this is a sudden repackaging for someone currently floundering in NXT or a name for a brand new signing from Mexico, we just don't know yet. But definitely keep an eye on how that name gets deployed.
Will do. Now, this next piece of news is the one that really caught my attention. Timothy Thatcher.
Toothless Timmy. The man himself.
The man literally looks like he was carved out of a block of granite. Reports are now saying he is scheduled to be the next general manager of Evolve.
This is a brilliant, brilliant casting decision by management.
First, clarify what Evolve actually is in the year 2026. Because older fans remember it as an indie promotion run by Gabe Sapolsky.
Right. WWE purchased the Evolve brand and its tape library years ago. Now, in 2026, it functions as a very specific tier of their developmental system. Think of it as the bridge between the raw day one recruits at the Performance Center and the polished, highly produced TV product of NXT. It's the finishing school for wrestlers.
And having Timothy Thatcher run that finishing school.
It sets a very definitive tone for the brand. Thatcher's style is heavily rooted in the Catchpoint philosophy. It is incredibly serious, grounded, painful, submission-based wrestling. He is the absolute antithesis of the modern sports entertainer who does choreographed dances to the ring.
He is not going to tolerate any nonsense from the younger guys.
None at all. By installing him as the general manager, the strict, uncompromising authority figure, you are actively telling the audience in the talent pool, Evolve is about the pure wrestling. It gives the brand a gritty, realistic identity. I can clearly see a segment where he's staring down two guys arguing backstage and he just whispers, get in the ring or get out of my building.
It fits his aura perfectly.
And
I really love that direction for Evolve.
Mm-hmm.
Just a couple other roster notes before we move on to the other side of the fence. Tiffany Stratton. She made an announcement about entering a legitimate bodybuilding competition.
This is quite interesting. It really speaks to her crossover appeal. Tiffany is already an incredible athlete, a world-class gymnast before wrestling. But bodybuilding requires a level of dietary and physical discipline that is just insane, even for a professional wrestler.
Well, she looks like $1 million every time she steps out there.
She does. And for WWE, this is just fantastic PR. It puts their homegrown star in a totally different world, featured in different fitness magazines and websites. It showcases the superstar aspect of the talent beyond just taking bumps.
And then we look at the other side of the athletic coin. Gable Steveson.
The Gable Steveson debate just continues to rage on.
The question is he UFC ready? Because fans are really split on this. He had a recent performance, I think it was a grappling transition fight or a jiu-jitsu showcase, and the reviews online were very mixed.
It is a harsh reminder that an elite athletic pedigree does not guarantee instant success in combat sports or pro wrestling. Gable has the Olympic gold medal. He has unbelievable raw power. But the transition from amateur wrestling to pro wrestling didn't quite click the way they hoped, and the transition to MMA is a whole different beast involving striking defense and complex submission defense.
He's kind of stuck in this weird athletic limbo right now.
He really is. The fans are highly critical because they see the Brock Lesnar level potential, but the actual application in the cage hasn't matched the hype yet. He has to learn an entirely new game from scratch, and that takes years of getting punched in the face.
It's a tough road to walk. All right, let's cross the aisle. Segment 4. We need to talk about AEW and some big international news. And the biggest story coming out of Jacksonville involves Swerve Strickland.
The mogul.
He has officially been fined $100,000 and suspended by the company.
That is a massive eye-catching number.
$100,000. I mean, that's a small house in some parts of the country. That's a luxury sports car.
It is. And naturally, the first question on everyone's mind in the wrestling bubble is the classic. Is this a work or a shoot?
So what is your read on this? Because that is a whole lot of real money to lose if it's a legitimate shoot fine.
When you see a number like $100,000 specifically publicized in a press release or on television, my instinct leans very heavily toward it being a work, a storyline element.
Why is that?
Because in legitimate corporate governance, real disciplinary fines are almost always handled internally and quietly. They are often subject to HR policies, collective bargaining if applicable, or legal caps. You very rarely see a major company issue a public statement saying, "We fined John Doe exactly 100 grand," unless they are actively trying to sell a narrative to the public.
So the dollar amount is just a prop for the story.
Exactly. By stating that specific massive amount, they are selling the extreme severity of his actions in the ring. They are telling the audience at home, Swerve is so dangerous, so violently out of control right now, that he is literally costing himself a fortune just to hurt his enemies.
It monetizes his aggression. It essentially tells me that his pure hatred for his opponent is worth more to him than financial security.
That is a brilliant way to put it. It's a cost-benefit analysis of kayfabe hatred. And logistically, behind the scenes, it serves a very practical purpose, too.
The write-off.
Swerve has been going incredibly hard for over a year. His in-ring style is physically demanding. A storyline suspension allows him to go home, heal his battered body, maybe film an outside media project, and most crucially, let the fans actually miss seeing him on television.
Because when he comes back, broke and angry.
That is an instant main event angle waiting to happen. He returns with an absolute vengeance.
I love the psychology of that. Yeah. Now, speaking of people who absolutely thrive on being hated.
Mm-hmm.
MJF, the AEW world champion.
Our favorite scumbag.
There was an incident at an indie match he was working recently. The crowd started chanting. Well, we can't see it here, but let's call it the F-Ice chant. A very derogatory personal chant involving a certain icy substance.
Right. A very hostile, unscripted environment.
And MJF, instead of getting flustered or legitimately angry, he just seemed to feed on it.
This is heel psychology 101, but MJF basically has a PhD in it at this point. He is a master conductor of crowds.
A conductor of hate.
Yes. Think about it. Most wrestlers today, deep down, really want to be the cool heel. They want to do flashy moves, and they want the fans to secretly love them and buy their black t-shirts. MJF genuinely wants you to despise him. When the crowd gets nasty, when they start chanting deeply personal things that would completely rattle a lesser performer, he smiles. Because he knows he has them in the palm of his hand.
He manipulates that raw negative energy.
He does. He takes that heat, that genuine visceral dislike from the building, and he expertly transfers it to his opponent. If the crowd hates MJF that much, they will loudly cheer for absolutely anyone who steps up and punches him in the face.
Yep.
That is his core job description. He makes the babyface look like a conquering hero just by being the ultimate irredeemable villain.
It's brilliant to watch him work. Now, on a slightly more somber note regarding AEW, let's talk about Britt Baker.
The DMD.
There's been a real update on her future in the ring. We all know she's a dentist. A real-life, practicing dentist with her own clinic. And the serious conversation now is about her wrestling future versus her long-term medical career.
This situation really highlights the stark reality of part-time status in modern professional wrestling. Britt Baker carried that women's division on her back for a long time. But dentistry is a highly demanding, precision-based profession. You have patients in pain, you have strict appointments. You can't just cancel on a patient needing a root canal because you suddenly have a booked match in Japan.
And more importantly, you can't be a functioning dentist if your hands are shaking because you took a bad bump on your neck the night before.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The sheer physical toll of wrestling, the cumulative neck issues, the back spasms, the concussion risks, directly threatens her longevity as a medical professional. I think we are currently seeing a natural transition where wrestling becomes the occasional special attraction for her, and the dental practice rightfully becomes the primary focus.
It's a really smart life choice. Always have a backup plan. Or, in her specific case, a very lucrative primary plan.
Absolutely. It's the healthiest approach you could take.
Okay, let's move into segment 5. We call this Myths, Misconceptions, and History. We're going to bust some persistent internet narratives.
Always my favorite part of the show. Let's get into it.
First, big myth. Retirements are sudden. We saw some news leak about the original long-term plans for AJ Styles' eventual retirement match.
Right. And this leak reveals a massive misconception that casual fans hold. Fans often think a wrestler just wakes up one Tuesday morning, feels their knees aching, and says, "I'm done. I'm retiring today." Or they assume they get injured and are just forced to disappear instantly.
But with a franchise guy like AJ.
With a bona fide legend like AJ Styles, the sunset is meticulously planned out 1 to 2 years in advance.
Years. Plural.
Yes. You have to map the entire architecture of it out. Who ultimately gets the rub of retiring him? Does it elevate a young star, or is it a respect match against another veteran? Is it going to be a year-long retirement tour? Is it a final dramatic match at WrestleMania? The merchandise team needs months to design and produce the commemorative shirts. The creative team needs to carefully build the story arc so it peaks at the right moment.
So when we see a guy standing in the ring, crying, giving a retirement speech, the rough draft of that speech was probably outlined 18 months ago.
The broad trajectory of the exit was yes. Unless a catastrophic career-ending injury forces their hand unexpectedly, the exit from the company is just as heavily scripted and produced as their debut entrance. It is a carefully curated monument to their entire career.
That is fascinating to think about. Okay, myth number 2. Cody Rhodes was always the hero.
Oh, this is a big one, especially for the newer fans who just jumped on board.
Yeah, if you started watching wrestling in the last 3 years, Cody is essentially Captain America. He kisses the babies in the front row. He gives away his weightlifting belt to a crying kid. He fights the evil bloodline. He is the embodiment of pure goodness.
But you cannot fully understand the hero without understanding the villain he used to be. We have to talk about his star turn.
He was a spectacular heel.
He was a fantastic, deeply annoying heel. Think back to the dashing Cody Rhodes era, checking his face in the mirror, handing out grooming tips to ugly fans, or his run as the corporate suit EVP in early AEW where the crowds turned on him.
Why does all that past baggage matter for his current mega babyface run?
Because the core lesson of wrestling psychology is that you have to learn to be a truly hated villain to fully understand how to get universally cheered. Cody knows exactly what specific buttons to push to make people boo him. Therefore, he knows exactly what behaviors to avoid to keep them cheering. He constructs his current babyface persona as the direct, calculated antidote to his old heel tendencies.
So the smile is brighter now, because he knows exactly how effective his scowl used to be.
Poetically put, yes. You can't effectively portray the light without intimately knowing the shadow.
I really like that. Okay, last myth here. Production secrets. We need to talk about botches.
The dreaded B word of the internet wrestling community.
There was a report this week of a big botch on Friday Night SmackDown and subsequently some real backstage heat on the competitors involved when they got back to the curtain. First, for the uninitiated listeners, clearly define a botch and define heat.
Simply put, a botch is a mistake during a match. A move timed wrong, a foot slipping on the ropes, a dropped catch, or a missed cue. Heat is the resulting backstage anger or resentment from your peers, the producers, or the management.
So someone messed up a move on live TV and people in the back are mad. But everyone makes mistakes, right? It's live TV.
Right. But the nuance here, and this is what the fans online almost always miss when they complain, is that the heat from management isn't usually about the physical mistake itself. It's almost entirely about the recovery.
How you fix it on the fly while millions are watching.
Exactly. Pro wrestling is essentially live theater mixed with high-speed gymnastics. Things go wrong every single night. A true veteran knows how to cover it up seamlessly. If you swing and completely miss a punch, you immediately step forward and grab a tight headlock. If you slip off the top rope, you hit the mat and instantly grab your knee, selling an injury. You protect the illusion at all costs.
So the real heat comes down on the rookies when they panic.
Yes. When they freeze like a deer in headlights, when they completely break character, stand up, and look over at the referee with a face that says, "What do I do next?" That completely exposes the business. That makes it look fake to the guy changing channels. The veterans in the back get angry not because you slipped, gravity happens to everyone, but because you didn't have the ring awareness to handle the slip professionally.
That is a crucial, crucial distinction to make. It's about maintaining professionalism, not demanding robotic perfection.
Correct. The show must go on, and it must look real.
All right. We are heading into the home stretch here. Segment 6, listener recommendations and viewing guide. We have thrown a ton of inside baseball info at you today. What should the listeners actually go out and watch this coming week?
I have a few specific recommendations to keep an eye on.
Hit me with them.
First, for pure entertainment value, go find that smartphone clip of Dominic Mysterio meeting his twin in the airport. It is circulating everywhere. It is an absolute masterclass in staying in character while completely acknowledging the sheer absurdity of the situation. It will definitely make you laugh.
Oh, definitely check that out. It's gold.
Second, keep a very close eye on Dorian Van Dux down in the developmental system.
The vampire himself.
The artist formerly known as Mike DiVecchio, yes.
Yeah.
Watch his upcoming matches. Try to ignore the silly name for a moment and just watch the physical work in the ring. See how his brawling style adapts to the WWE camera style. It's going to be a great case study in watching a raw indie talent evolve under the massive WWE production umbrella.
Okay, and what storyline should we be actively tracking this week?
Two things to track. One, the Timothy Thatcher GM role over in Evolve. Is this leading to a completely new weekly episodic show format for the network? Is Evolve going to become a dedicated shoot-style mat wrestling brand?
Mm.
Tracking how Thatcher manages that young roster will give us huge clues about the future direction of WWE's entire developmental tier.
I am glued to that one. I love the technical stuff.
And two, the ongoing fallout of the Swerve Strickland suspension over in AEW. Track the weeks he is gone. When does he finally return? And more importantly, when he does step back through the curtain, pay close attention to the level of violence. If he comes back noticeably more dangerous and unhinged, we know the storyline fine was the direct catalyst for a major monster main event push.
I cannot wait for Swerve to come back. The pop is going to be massive.
Me neither. It's going to be great television.
All right, that brings us to the end of another massive show. Let's recap the big stuff quickly.
We covered the complicated business landscape of the Elimination Chamber. Why those ticket sales might be a little soft due to the Jeff Jarrett theory of market saturation. We analyzed Dominic Mysterio's global expansion and what holding the AAA mega title means for his character.
We looked at the deep psychology of Liv Morgan's tears on Raw and the highly strategic pulling of the Io Sky versus Julia match to artificially build pay-per-view anticipation.
And we broke down the future of the industry with the WWE ID pipeline, the trademark rebranding of Dorian Van Dux, and the disciplinary storylines in AEW regarding Swerve and MJF.
It has been a packed show, as always. Before we go, a very quick reminder to support the people who actively support us.
WorldWrestlingEvents.com and BetOnline. If you want to get in on the wrestling action this weekend, check the link right down in the description. Claim that exclusive bonus offer, up to $250 in free bets plus 100 free spins.
Do it. It is a great way to enhance the viewing experience. Now, my friend, send us off with a final thought, something for the fans to chew on until next week.
Well, we talked a lot today about the Io Sky versus Julia match being pulled from TV. And it really made me think about the philosophical concept of the unseen match. In wrestling history, some of the absolute most legendary, mythic matches are the ones that happened in empty arenas or on untelevised house shows with no cameras rolling, or the ones that were promised on a marquee and never actually delivered due to injury or politics.
Like the ultimate forbidden fruit.
Exactly. Sometimes the matches we explicitly don't get to see end up driving the business lore more than the ones we do see. The imagination of the fan is arguably the most powerful booking tool in the entire world. WWE management knows that. By withholding that dream match, they are essentially letting your imagination book the spots. And your imagination always books a five-star classic.
Whoa. That is deep. And entirely true, honestly. I've booked some absolutely incredible WrestleMania main events in my head over the years.
Haven't we all? The perfect match only exists in the mind.
Well, on that profound note, thank you for listening to World Wrestling Events. We will be back next week with more news, more rumors, and more wrestling.
See you at the bell.
See you at the bell.